So let's pause here and have some time for questions and answers. There's still a few questions from last night. Some of you may have questions from this evening. Please feel free to write them down and the ushers will collect them. Let me start with the ones from last night. So if the world should come to an end, is there no more chance to be reborn as a human in the next life? Okay, our Earth, our planet Earth, is one small, tiny little piece in this whole wide universe. There's many other human realms in different places in the universe. So even because everything is impermanent, one day this planet will end. Even when that happens, we will be able to have precious human lives in other planets, in other places. But speaking here about the world and taking care of the world, I very seldom go to the movies. I only go to documentaries, basically. And so somebody offered the Abbey residence. They took us to see this movie called An Inconvenient Truth. Do people in Singapore, do you know about this? It's a film by Al Gore. He was the one who won the election the first time when he was running against George Bush, but because of the American policy, Bush got the presidency because he had the electoral votes. Anyway, Al Gore has been very interested in ecology and in preserving the environment, and he made this movie, a documentary called An Inconvenient Truth, and I really encourage you to see it because it talks about global warming and it talks about the danger to our planet that we human beings are contributing to through the way that we use materials, okay? Through the burning of fossil fuels, through not recycling, and, you know, so many things that we're doing. We are actually endangering our own lives here because we're changing the climate through us human beings living on it. When the climate changes, everything's going to change, okay? Especially Singapore, you should be concerned about this because you're an island surrounded by water. If the glaciers and the packs ice packs at the North Pole and South Pole melt, the oceans are going to rise. What's going to happen to Singapore? Okay? So this documentary is very well done, and it's really showing us a lot of things that we can do to take care of the environment. And I believe as a Buddhist community, this is a very important issue for us. Okay? We talk about love and compassion, but we have to put our love and compassion into practical action. Okay? And take care of our planet, because if we, you know, misuse our environment, then what kind of planet are we leaving for the children and grandchildren and future generations? Okay? If we say that we cherish sentient beings, then we need to cherish the environment that we all live in. Okay? And you'll notice every time I come to Singapore, I always encourage people to recycle. And whenever I'm at places, you know, I'll save my little yogurt cartons, I'll save my paper, and I'll say to the Singaporeans I'm with, where do I recycle it? And they all look at me and go, oh, just put it in the garbage. You know? Because if we continue doing this, what's happening to the world's resources? Okay. And how is this contributing to global warming and climatic change? Okay. What are we leaving for future generations on this world if we don't recycle the resources that we enjoy? Okay. It's really very, very important. Yeah. Now, lots of people may think, well, you know, in 100 years when we have those problems, I won't be here. Well, what about if you have a precious human life back on this planet? Yeah, you might be here. Okay, and even if you aren't here, future generations will be. So we really need to take care of our environment. And I really encourage you. And you know what? I bet you can make money doing it. Now everybody's interested. Okay, I said the word money. Everybody's very excited. Make money, make money. You know, I bet there's a lot of new industries that can begin through recycling and through thinking about how to use the world's resources in a better way. So I really encourage the Buddhist community to, we have an expression, to walk your talk. Okay? So we talk about love and compassion, we should walk it. Okay? So next year there should be recycling centers. And I think Buddhist temples should really take the lead. Wouldn't that be wonderful? What an incredible contribution if Buddhist temples took the lead and instead of throwing away so much styrofoam and so much plastic, if the temples started recycling, you know, or started washing things instead of just throwing them out. This would be an incredible contribution. How do we see emptiness in daily situations? Okay, so if you want to see the nature of reality in daily situations, okay, be aware of how things arise dependently, okay? Because the more we are aware of dependent arising, the more we'll understand that things are empty of independent existence. So if we look at the building here that we're in and realize that it arose dependent on its parts, dependent on its causes, dependent on our mind labeling it, Taipei Buddhist Center. Yeah, if we see things as dependent, then we can see that they lack their own intrinsic nature, that they depend on causes, depend on parts, depend on the mind that conceives and labels them. So as you're going through your daily life, you know, look at things in this way. Train your mind to see things in this way. Okay. Another way to start to think about emptiness in your daily life is when you are upset, stop and ask yourself, who's upset? And then your mind usually says, I'm upset. And you say, who's upset? I'm upset. Well, wait a minute. Who's upset? Who is this I who's upset? Okay? Really, who is it? Look for that I that's upset. See if you can isolate something that is inherently you that is upset. Okay? And if you can't find it, then stop being upset because there's no solid person there to be upset. Okay, will sterilization of animals create unwholesome karma? I think it depends on the reason why you are sterilizing animals and what your motivation is. Okay, if there are, let's say in a neighborhood, too many dogs and too many cats, And you need some control of the number of animals in a neighborhood, and so you take them to be spayed or neutered so that to control the number of animals, and you're doing it, you know, for the sake of the animals so that there's not overpopulation of animals. I think that is, you know, you're doing it with a reasonable motivation, trying to benefit others, yeah, and that's very different than just sterilizing for the sake of doing it, okay? So we all know that the Dalai Lama is an enlightened holy master, but how come he still can't give up the attachment of wanting Tibet to be free and independent? How do you know that the Dalai Lama is experiencing attachment, and that attachment is his motivation for wanting Tibet to be free? How do you know that attachment's what's motivating him? Yeah. Do you think maybe he has compassion for the Tibetans and for the Chinese? Yeah. That he wants the whole area to live in peace and harmony, and that seeing that a free Tibet could contribute to that and could contribute to the existence of the Buddha Dharma. You know, every time we want something, it doesn't mean we're attached to it. Sometimes people have this misconception, yeah, and it comes because often we mistranslate. There's one word, and sometimes we translate it as desire, and sometimes we translate the same word as attachment. Okay? And there's confusion if we translate it as desire, because in English, the word desire, we can speak of good desires and non-productive desires. Okay? So when we're attached to something, when we're clinging to something out of self-centeredness, that's the kind of attachment that causes difficulties that we want to give up. But when we desire something wholesome, when we desire to practice the Dharma, when we desire for sentient beings to be happy, when we desire for people to be free and to live in peace, those kind of desires are not necessarily attachment. Okay? They could be desires that we have because of genuine love and compassion for people. Now, if we go about killing others in order to gain freedom, then maybe our wish for freedom has attachment. Okay? Because killing others in the name of freedom, I don't think is very wise. But, you know, the Tibetans and the Dalai Lama in particular are advocating nonviolence, and nobody's getting hurt in that, you know, in their wish to be free. So don't think that every time, you know, there's a wish for something or a desire that it means that there's attachment. Because otherwise, people generate the wrong idea that Buddhists are just like bumps on the log, you know, that you don't have any ambition. You just sit there and go, duh. No, I have no attachment. It's all okay. Duh. You know. That's not true at all. In fact, because, you know, a bodhisattva has no attachment, therefore, they have a lot of compassion. They have so much motivation. Bodhisattvas are very busy people. They're not just sitting there going, duh, all the time. They're working for the benefit of sentient beings. They have lots to do. Okay? I might say, because I don't know if I'll get through all these questions, that if you read Buddhism for Beginners or read any of my books, you might also find answers to your questions. Let's see what we have here. Okay. So there, somebody's saying here that their relative is not evil by nature, but they have undergone two abortions due to certain circumstances at that point of time. So what can I do to help or advise her in order for her negative karma to be lessened? You have to be very tactful and very careful in this kind of situation. And, you know, wait until the person is ready to hear it. And chances are they feel very bad about having an abortion themselves. I think most people, in the case of unwanted pregnancy, would prefer not to have an abortion, but they have abortions due to the circumstances. And so purification definitely needs to be done. It is an act of killing. But I think it's good in society if we can find other ways to handle cases where there's unwanted pregnancy. And so to encourage people to have the children and to give them up for adoption. My younger sister is adopted. And I was very, very glad that her mother, her birth mother, had her as so that my family was able to adopt her. Because I always wanted a sister, and I just had a brother. So now I have a brother and a sister. Okay? So I think there are alternatives to abortion that, you know, if society were to encourage these alternatives, then people would not feel in such dire straits when there was an unwanted pregnancy. And I think also to encourage birth control. I think when people are sexually active, they have to be sexually responsible. And if you don't want children, then you have to use birth control. You know, and if you don't use birth control, then be prepared to have a kid. Because that's what happens. Duh. Okay. Okay, unhealthy people can become healthy in their next life. What about mentally ill people? Can they have a healthy mind in their next life? Sure. You know? In the next life, different karma could ripen and they could, you know, be free of mental illness. Okay, so they're asking if people with mental illness can practice meditation. So especially if somebody has a history of depression or panic attack, can they practice meditation? I think it depends on the individual and it depends on their Dharma teacher. Okay? So I think it is suitable for people who have some mental health concerns to practice meditation under the guidance of a teacher. So you should always, you know, a person with that kind of difficulty should be under the guidance of a good spiritual teacher and they should follow their teacher's instructions. If they don't want to do meditation, they can also do other spiritual practices like bowing or making offerings or chanting. Things like this can be very good for purifying negative karma as well. But it was interesting. Every winter at Shravasti Abbey, we close the abbey to visitors and we have a 3-month meditation retreat. And there was a man who came last year, and he had panic attacks. I didn't know about this before he came to the retreat, and I only found out about it during the retreat when he started talking about having panic attacks. But it was very interesting because through the retreat, he learned to watch his mind. And he began to see how what he was thinking contributed to the panic attacks. And so by the end of the retreat, when he felt a panic attack coming, instead of having certain thoughts, he would let go of those thoughts and switch his mind to taking refuge or thinking about love and compassion. And he began to realize that he could control the panic attacks by not letting his mind follow the same old thoughts. Okay? Similar with depression, sometimes people need to take medication, but meditation can also help them with depression, because sometimes the meditation helps them to see that their own thoughts are part of the cause of the depression, and then to let go of certain thoughts and not hang on to them. And when you do that, then the depression can also cease. But it's good to always be in consultation with a qualified spiritual mentor when you're doing that, if you have a history of mental difficulties. Okay? And so they're saying, if I continue to avoid creating bad karma, create plenty of good karma, and practice metta meditation in this lifetime, will I be born without any mental illness in my next lifetime so that I can practice meditation and gain enlightenment? Why not? Yeah? If you create a lot of positive potential, and I think especially doing metta meditation is very wonderful and very soothing for the mind. Metta meditation is meditation on love and compassion. You know, for those of you who are picking up the brochures about the Abbey and, you know, and ask us to do prayers, and in return we ask you to contemplate the four immeasurables, you know, then by doing this you create a lot of good karma. And yes, it definitely creates the cause to be free of mental difficulties and mental illness in a future life. Okay, so killing is a negative action. And what is the karmic effect of someone who has killed, like some of the inmates that I'm talking about? Well, horrible karma. Yeah? I mean, killing other living beings creates cause to be born in the hell realms. And even if we're born as human beings, to have a lot of illness, to live in a place where there's war, to, have a short life. So some of the people, the inmates that I've worked with, they've created this karma. But some of them are also very earnestly practicing to purify that karma. Remember, I was just mentioning that the Abbey has 3 months of meditation every winter. Well, we tell other people, and this is for inmates and also other people like you, that they can do the retreat from afar by doing one session of the practice every day during the time that all of us at the Abbey are in retreat. So even though the retreatants at the Abbey, we're doing 6 sessions a day. You know, the people who have their work and their life and everything, you do 1 session a day. But in that way, you're participating in the retreat, and you feel the support, and you feel the support of the people at the Abbey. You feel involved in supporting the people at the Abbey. So in the last 2 years, you know, when the Abbey's done that, we've had many inmates who have participated in the retreat from afar. So last year, actually, when we were doing Vajrasattva retreat, which is especially for purifying negative karma, we had over 70 people worldwide participating in the retreat from afar by doing at least 1 meditation session at home. And 20 of those 70 people were inmates. Yeah. And the inmates, they would write to us and tell us about how their meditation sessions were going. And it was wonderful because it kept the people at the Abbey from complaining. Okay? Because, you know, sometimes when you're on retreat, you get so sensitive and you go, oh, this other person in the retreat hall, when they move their prayer beads, they're making too much noise and it's disturbing me. You know, they complain about all sorts of silly things. Well, when we would get the letters from the inmates, and the inmate would be saying, well, I'm in a dorm room with 300 other men, and I'm doing my meditation on the top bunk, and there's a light bulb 3 feet away from my head. And all of a sudden, the people at the Abbey would go, wow, do we have good conditions for doing retreat? You know, because here's somebody trying to do their retreat in a room with 300 other people talking, screaming, singing. Yeah. And yet the inmates, I mean, they put out incredible effort to do their practice. You know, prison is not a quiet environment. It's very noisy. And they would do their practice no matter how much noise there was. It's incredible. Yeah. So the people of the Abbey found it very inspiring to receive the letters from the inmates. And also from the other people who did the retreat from afar, because it really made everybody very encouraged. Okay, so somebody's saying, you have said that we are fortunate to be born in our land of plenty, why our fellow human beings are suffering in Africa. Shouldn't they be happy to suffer? Because without the ripening of the seed of bad karma, there will be no bliss. Right? Wrong. Okay? This is the way we think when we experience suffering. When we experience suffering, we say, it's the ripening of our negative karma, and I'm very happy that negative karma is ripening because now I'm finishing with it. But when we see other people suffering, we don't say, you should be happy to suffer because your negative karma is suffering. And you know what? I'll cause you a little bit extra suffering to purify your negative karma. That is not the way to think. Uh-uh. Okay? So when other people are suffering, we react with compassion. When we have problems, we rejoice that our negative karma is ripening. Okay, so somebody's asking about the bird flu. And is the virus a sentient being? Usually viruses are not sentient beings. They're not considered sentient beings. And so, what's the karma of killing all of these birds, and do we have to face the consequences? Yep. You know, if we take the lives of others, then we face the consequences of taking the lives of others. If you're ever in a situation where, you know, killing is going on, try not to do it. Try not to support it. If you can't do that, then at least regret it. Okay, so we have to stop now. Let's just read out loud the verses that we covered. Okay, so we'll go verse 7 to verse 23. And while we're reading it, really meditate, contemplate along with what the words say, and visualize all these things and make these offerings in your mind to all the Buddhists and Bodhisattvas. Devoid of merit and destitute, I have nothing else to offer. Therefore, may the protectors whose concerns are for the welfare of others accept this by their own power for my sake. I completely offer my entire self to the jhanas and their children. O Supreme Beings, accept me, I reverently devote myself to your service. Being free from fear of mundane existence due to your protection, I shall serve sentient beings. I shall completely transcend my earlier vices, and henceforth I shall sin no more. In sweetly fragrant bathing chambers, whose beautiful pillars are radiant with jewels, glowing canopies made of pearls, and crystal floors transparent and sparkling, I bathe the Tathagatas and their children with many vases studded with superb jewels and filled with the pleasing fragrant flowers and water, to the accompaniment of songs and instrumental music. I dry their bodies with scented, immaculate, exquisite cloths. Then I offer them beautifully colored and sweetly fragrant garments. I adorn Samantabhadra, Ajita, Manjugosha, Lokeshvara, and others with those divine, soft, delicate, and colorful raiments, and with the most precious of jewels. With perfumes permeating 1,000,000,000 worlds, I anoint the bodies of the lords of sages that are blazing with the luster of well-refined, rubbed, and polished gold. I worship the most glorious lords of sages with all wonderfully fragrant and pleasing blossoms, Mandarava flowers, blue lotuses, and others, and with splendidly arranged garlands. I perfume them with enchanting clouds of incenses, having a pungent aroma. I offer them feasts consisting of various foods and drinks. I offer them jeweled lamps mounted in rows on golden lotuses, and I scatter lovely drifts of blossoms on the floor anointed with perfume. To those filled with love, I also offer brilliant multitudes of palaces, delightful with songs of praise, radiant with garlands of pearls and jewels, and ornamented at the entrances in four directions. I bring to mind the great sages' exquisitely beautiful jeweled parasols, perfectly raised with golden handles, lovely shapes, and inlaid pearls. Thereafter, may delightful clouds of offerings rise high, and clouds of instrumental music that enrapture all sentient beings. May showers of flowers, jewels, and the like continually fall on the images, reliquies, and all the jewels of the sublime Dharma. Just as Manjugosha and others worship the Venus, so do I worship the Tathagatas, the protectors, together with their children. With hymns that are seas of melodies, I praise the oceans of virtues. May the clouds of harmonies of praise ascend to them in the same way. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a minute and absorb the teachings. And then let's rejoice at our time spent together developing positive potential. And let's dedicate all this great virtue, this great merit and good karma, and send it out into the universe, imagining it as light streaming from our heart so that it goes out and it touches each and every living being, pacifying their mental afflictions, purifying their karma, bringing them peace and contentment in their own hearts and minds. And let's dedicate that through our efforts tonight and our practice and all the goodness there is in the world, may all beings swiftly become fully enlightened Buddhists.